One of the things that it comes up a lot currently, particularly with the young adults and the teenagers I'm working with, is this idea of permanence, that they are depressed. They're always going to be depressed. They've got this thing wrong with them. They've got this illness. They've got this brain disease. And my job, I think, is to get in there and shake that up a little bit.
Depression itself is built on a foundation of passivity. If depression was a commercial product, its advertising slogan would be, "Why bother?" And so getting people moving is a really important thing, but empowering people who are feeling so helpless, so hopeless.
And here's the heartbreak. Depression is one of psychiatry's great success stories. Over 90% of people who get treatment from depression report substantial relief, but fewer than 2 in 5 get help.
The important thing for therapists to remember with depression is that depression, it tends to be recurring. Most people who have an episode of major depression are going to have future episodes of major depression. And so when I think of treating someone with depression, I always try to keep that in mind and make my therapy goal not just helping them feel better and recover from this particular episode, but also teach them something that will help them stay well the rest of their lives. That's actually, I think, the most important goal in depression treatment.
Depression can be one of the most difficult illnesses for clients to overcome. Once it settles into a client's brain, it can foster these deep feelings of permanence, like it will never go away. On top of that, clients who struggle with depression now can be more susceptible to it in the future. They are more sensitive to it and can feel the cloud when it starts creeping back. Sad thing is, most clients are ill-equipped to prevent it. So how do we work with this? How do we address the most critical parts of depression that sustain its power? Hi, I'm Dr. Ruth Buzinski, a licensed psychologist in the state of Connecticut and the president of the National Institute for the Clinical Application of Behavioral Medicine. In this program, we'll look at how to work with the challenging parts of depression. We'll begin with the low motivation that often comes with depression. We'll look at how low motivation can bind a client to their depression, and then we'll get into strategies to disrupt that. Then we'll take on the rigid thinking and negative beliefs that come with depression. We'll explore the particular thought patterns that can put the client at greatest risk for developing depression. And then we'll share ways to bump these patterns and keep those clients from internalizing these thoughts. We're going to explore the role of trauma in depression and how to activate a client's body when it's in a depressive shutdown state. We'll also get into the brain, and we'll tell you about some powerful strategies to grow new brain fibers to help shift a client out of depression. Lastly, we'll look at the vital importance of a relapse plan, how to give clients the necessary tools to overcome their depression, and how to take action if it returns. By the end of this program, you'll have a solid set of insights and skills to complement your treatment strategies. So let's get right to this. Enjoy this quick thought on depression from Bill O'Hanlon, and I'll see you over in Module 1.
So I'll tell you a particular case of a person who came to see me. Actually, I was doing it as a consultation because another therapist had basically been burned out by this client. We'll call her Cindy. And Cindy, the other therapist called me up when she knew I was going to see Cindy and said, "I feel like she sucks the marrow out of my bones. I liked her at first, but she became so dependent and so needy. She would call me every night, and she was suffering so much, I would take her calls, but I had no life because she would talk to me for hours at night. I wasn't good at setting boundaries, and she wasn't getting any better." And so then I got the referral, and I did this consultation. And I didn't have that experience of her because immediately I did this thing that I do a lot, which is I marble in descriptions of what the depression is like and descriptions of moments of not being depressed. And so for Cindy, I started to talk to her, okay, well, tell me about a typical day these days. And she told me that generally she'd get depressed for about 2 months and nothing would bring her out of it. And then after 2 months, it would start to lift, maybe something biochemical, maybe something else, who knew. And she would be able to function again. And she would lose her job. She usually worked as a secretary receptionist. She wouldn't call in sick. She'd just get fired from her job because she was so non-functional during these times. And the only people she would talk to was her therapist and her best friend, who was also depressed, and they would just commiserate on how terrible life was. So it wasn't, she didn't have much social connection. When she wasn't depressed, I found out, she would hang out with girlfriends and they would go out to lunch. She would go to work and she would, you know, even if she was feeling bad, she would go to work. So I started to ask about depressed times. And I, one time when I was asking about it, I said, well, tell me, when you're living in Depresso land, how is this? And I just used this phrase, depresso land, and she chuckled a little. And she was in the middle of a depression, so it was a little funny to hear her laugh a little, but she found that description kind of lighthearted or something. And then she, I said, what are you like when you're not depressed? She goes, well, I'm confident and I'm competent. I go, okay, so you're living in depresso land, you're staying in bed until noon, you're staying in your night clothes until 7 o'clock at night. Now let's contrast that with you're living in competence land. How early do you get up? She goes, well, I'm always out of my apartment by 9 o'clock. I go, okay, so you're dressed, you're showered, you're out of the apartment by 9 o'clock. Yeah, okay. And who do you hang out with? Well, just my therapist and my depressed friend when you're in depresso land. Who do you hang out with when you're in competence or, you know, confidence land? My girlfriends, and, you know, we just talk about things, and I go to work when I'm not depressed and living in confidence land. And when I'm in depressive land, I don't go to work. And we just found all these contrasts. And by the end of the first consultation, she said, for some reason, I'm in the middle of a depression. I'm like a 3 weeks in and I feel really good right now. And it had reminded her of those times when she wasn't so depressed, which I think is a key characteristic of people who are depressed. They can't remember when they didn't feel this way. And they can't imagine that they're not going to feel that way sometime in the future. So I think it's really important to remind them. So I do this assessment that's actually an intervention assessment. I find out about depresso land and confidence land. And the other thing about that phrase was it took the depression from inside her to a place where she went. Depresso land is a place, not a state. And I think, again, that's so important because with depression, it's so easy to lose hope. You forget the future might have something good. And restoring hope is a big, big part of treating depression to me.